Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Supreme Court decision on the Christian fundamentalist baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple, and discuss the ruling with Rachel Lazar, the president and CEO of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. She joins us to discuss her article at The Advocate, "We Can Protect Religious Liberty Without Denying Rights to LGBT People," and how the Do Not Harm Act, co-sponsored by Senator Kamala Harris and Congressman Joseph Kennedy, would fix the main issues involved in this case, which the Supreme Court did not address in their narrow ruling. We will also examine Project Blitz, the legislative assault underway in state legislatures by Christian nationalists to reshape America, which has brought forward 75 In God We Trust bills in more than 20 legislatures using the claim of imaginary attacks on religious freedom to impose their narrow Christian fundamentalist dogma on the American public to dictate our political and cultural life. With a Christian fundamentalist televangelist asking his flock to pony up $54 million for him to fly around in a top-of-the-line Gulfstream private jet, it hardly seems possible that the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation's justification for Project Blitz is based on the absurd notion that Christians in America are oppressed and that Sharia law is about to be imposed on these beleaguered believers. Then, with President Trump touting last month's job numbers, we will go to the UK to speak with David Graeber, a professor of anthropology at the London School of Economics, about his new book just out, Bullshit Jobs, A Theory. We will discuss how up to 40% of the working public believe their jobs are pointless, a view held in both the private and public sector, and that less than half of their time spent working involves actual work. We will discuss the paradox that the more valuable your work is to society, the less you are paid for it, and as robotics replace repetitive manual labor, the need for a guaranteed universal basic income begins to look more necessary. Then finally, following today's barrage of petulant protestations in tweets from Trump claiming he has, quote, the absolute right to pardon himself, and that the Mueller investigation is led by, quote, 13 very angry and conflicted Democrats, is totally unconstitutional. We will speak with Brian Colt, a professor of law at Michigan State University, about his article in Foreign Policy written over a year ago, Can Trump Pardon Himself? We will analyze both Trump's and his TV lawyer Rudy Giuliani's claims of the presidential right to self-pardon, which they claim is supported by numerous legal scholars. And joining us now is Rachel Lazar, the president and CEO of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a lawyer. She has spent the past two decades fighting for inclusivity for all Americans, and she has an opinion piece at The Advocate, "We Can Protect Religious Liberty Without Denying Rights to LGBT People." Welcome to Background Briefing, Rachel Lazar.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Well, thank you, Rachel. And the Supreme Court released their findings in the case Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The headlines today are largely about a Christian baker winning at the Supreme Court. It doesn't appear to be quite that simple. How would you describe the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, I think the outcome is mixed, but it's definitely a shell of a victory, if you want to call it a victory, for Masterpiece Cake Shop. Technically, the court reversed the lower court's opinion and did rule on the side of Masterpiece Cake Shop, but they ruled on a very, very narrow ground where they found that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission's hearing was biased, and therefore that they weren't able to find for Charlie Craig and David Mullins on that specific basis that's particular to the fact pattern in this case. And what was great about this case, because it was 7-2, is that means that in the seven justices, for the majority, were all of the conservative justices. And all of the conservative justices agreed multiple times throughout this decision that when a business is open to the public, that means it's open to all. And that's very significant. Another thing that's significant is that while the court did technically rule on the side of Masterpiece Cake Shop, that the court does not say that businesses are entitled to distort the concept of religious freedom to deny services to couples like Charlie and David.
Well, it seems like they dodged that whole issue of the conflict between religious bakers and same-sex couples.
I mean, courts, you know, the Supreme Court looks for ways to rule on as narrow grounds as possible, especially in very controversial decisions. And here, you know, they, whenever they're able to find a way, which is, you know, not all the time, as you know, to have any kind of significant majority and narrow their ruling at this level, they do it. And that's what they seem to do here. But I will say that Justice Kagan, who was joined by Justice Breyer in her concurring opinion, strongly hinted that in the absence of these comments about religion that were made by a couple of members of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, that this case would have come out in favor of the couple.
Well, in the majority opinion, Anthony Kennedy made it clear that he's unwilling to restrict the rights of gay people in order to enhance the privileges of conservative Christians. But there's still four other justices who would rule that way, as far as I can tell.
Do you think? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, sort of, but at the same time, you know, here's an opinion that, and I'll quote from it, where the court recognized that disputes such as this one in Masterpiece must be resolved. And now here's the quote, without subjecting, they say gay persons, I'll say LGBTQ persons, to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. So there you had all seven justices who were saying that in the last sort of forceful paragraph of the opinion. So, you know, there was some recognition of the how we've evolved and that when businesses are open, that means open to all, including people who identify as gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, et cetera. So that's wonderful, that part.
So obviously, though, Hobby Lobby opened the door, did it not, that decision to the idea that corporations have rights above, in effect, in the case of Hobby Lobby, it was more important that their private corporation should be able to exempt itself from the Affordable Care Act. So how would you relate this decision to, say, Hobby Lobby?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you raised that. You're right. Hobby Lobby ruled that a business, a corporation, could have sincerely held religious beliefs that could deprive women employees of birth control, even though the Affordable Care Act had promised it to them. Here, the court didn't specifically take up this question of whether businesses can have sincerely held religious beliefs. But in a sense, there was, in my view, some kind of an acceptance of that notion, right? Just even in, you know, looking, it was almost implicit in looking at how the baker, Jack Phillips, was treated by the commission. You know, some could say, you know, it was sort of, it's inapposite how the commission treated Jack Phillips's religious beliefs, because when Jack Phillips incorporated, he intentionally created distance between his personal self and his personal assets and this bakery. And now he wants to use it both ways, right? And he wants to say he's personally intertwined with his business in a way that his business now has some kind of religious, sincerely held beliefs. And that is very much like Hobby Lobby. It's just that here the court didn't reach that officially. The court said, in any case, we think that there was a bias in the way the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado conducted its hearings. And so that's why we need to reverse the decision today.
And again, I'm speaking with Rachel Lazar, who's the president and CEO of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a lawyer. She has spent the past two decades fighting for inclusivity for all Americans, and she has an opinion piece at The Advocate, "We Can Protect Religious Liberty Without Denying Rights to LGBT People." So in terms of your article, when you say we can protect people without denying rights to LGBT people, I take it you're talking about what Kamala Harris and Joseph P. Kennedy are offering up in both the House and Senate, the Do No Harm Act. Is that what you're referring to?
That is what I'm referring to.
Could you tell us about what this act does, if it, assuming it, you know, it's obviously you've got a Republican House and a Republican Senate. It's not obviously going to have an easy passage unless there's a change in November. But what does it do, the Do No Harm Act?
Yes. So the Do No Harm Act ensures that our nation's main religious freedom law, which is called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, is used as a shield, as it was intended to protect religious exercise, not as a sword to harm and discriminate against others. So technically, it amends this religious freedom law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, to say that in certain areas, when it comes to child labor and protection, when it comes to discrimination laws, when it comes to healthcare laws, places where we've seen religion claimed as a license for discrimination, that religion can't be used to harm other or hurt other people. And to bring this religious freedom law back to its original purpose, so to leave a lot of it intact, which is it originally came about based on a very broad religious coalition, really across political spectrums, joining the civil rights community to say, in our country, we have religious minorities who need additional protections. They might want to wear religious attire that would otherwise be banned. They might want to take their religious holidays off, but because they're in the minority, these holidays aren't recognized, and we should have protections for religious freedom for these religious minorities in these ways. And of course, religious freedom protects all of our religious beliefs, whether we're in the minority or in the majority. But what it doesn't do, and what it shouldn't do, which would violate our core principle around it, is allow one religious group, and in the case of Masterpiece, it's a white fundamentalist Christian group, to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us. So this law, the Do No Harm Act, is related to the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision very much because it's about ensuring that religious freedom is not twisted to cause harm to people, like what happened when the bakery denied Charlie and David their wedding cake. But it's different, the Do No Harm Act, in that it amends our main national religious freedom law, whereas the Masterpiece Cake Shop case was about the free exercise clause of our First Amendment.
Well, how would, if it were passed, and as I point out, it's a pretty uphill battle unless the House changes and the Senate changes in November. But meanwhile, I'd like to know how that, if it were passed, how it would impact what's going on at the state level with Project Blitz, which is a legislative assault by Christian nationalists to reshape America's laws. They have at least 75 bills have come forward in more than 20 states during 2017 and 2018. The group is called the Congressional Prayer Caucus Foundation, and they're clearly being successful in their so-called In God We Trust bills, a number of which have become law since 2017. And it's extraordinary to call it Project Blitz, because Blitz having echoes of Blitzkrieg, the Nazi war machine in World War II. So let's start with whether or not these state laws could be superseded by a federal law such as the Do No Harm Act.
Yeah, that would be tricky. I mean, I'd like to see, you know, the Do No Harm Act also passed across the states. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act was deemed by the Supreme Court not to apply to states, you know, the religious freedom bill that we were talking about, for example, before. And therefore, a lot of states then passed Religious Freedom Restoration Acts on their own, some of which were egregious and some bills which were so egregious that they actually never even became law, like one in Indiana, if you recall. I'm glad that you brought up Project Blitz, because Project Blitz is doing at the state legislative level what like a group like Alliance Defending Freedom, which is technically labeled a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, is doing in the courts. So what Alliance Defending Freedom, which, by the way, has a budget of around $50 million a year, is doing is they're bringing a number of lawsuits in the courts to try to allow businesses the right to discriminate against, in particular, and really targeting people who identify as bisexual, gay, lesbian, transgender, queer, targeting women and their reproductive freedom, and frankly, many others who are swept into that, like religious minorities and other groups. So that's what Alliance Defending Freedom is doing in the courts. What Project Blitz is doing, as you said, is they've put together really a playbook, and it's 116 pages long, and it lays out a whole legislative strategy in the states to change the law step by step, to allow ultimately businesses and the government to discriminate in the name of religion. And, you know, we can talk, if you're interested, we can talk more about it. There are sort of three different phases of it, but it intentionally starts out with these very symbolic gestures, like "In God We Trust," sort of everywhere, including, let's say, like on police cars or something, that feel more harmless and, you know, are often less opposed. And then they start moving to bills intended to promote teaching Christianity. And frankly, I should say, you know, a fundamentalist Christian version of Christianity, because Christianity is very heterogeneous in public schools, and culminating in what I just said, which is businesses and frankly, trying to permit government employees as well to discriminate if they have, quote, sincerely held religious beliefs. So there is what we're seeing sort of overall in the country right now is this united strategy, right? It's coming as a legal strategy. It's coming as a legislative strategy. And by the way, we're also seeing it very much in the Trump-Pence administration as part of their regressive agenda. And so it's sort of everywhere, this strategy to really use religion as a basis, an excuse to stop social change, you know, and to sort of equalize the power dynamics in America as we're at this wonderful point in the American experiment of vibrant diversity.
Well, of course, the Christian right like to borrow from the martyrdom of Christ and make it seem like they're being oppressed and punished. And Trump plays into that by saying, oh, we can now, we're free to celebrate Christmas again. Like, you know, were we never prevented from celebrating Christmas? What kind of nonsense is that? And, you know, what they're talking about, in effect, is a form of Sharia law, the very thing that they rail against, even though it's a completely unrealistic possibility that the states of Oklahoma, which passed anti-Sharia laws, would ever be forced to get rid of the Bible and take up the Quran. I mean,
That's right. And I have a couple things to respond to your remarks with. One is, you're absolutely right. I mean, what we're seeing is a form of fundamentalist Christian fragility, really, which I liken to the concept of white fragility. That there's a scholar called Robin DiAngelo who's defined, you know, white people's reactions to being sort of challenged about racism. She's called it white fragility, where white people get defensive and they say they're the ones being attacked and the discrimination is against them. And right, it's a very similar pattern to what you see when fundamentalist Christians' power is challenged, right? Oh, we're the ones being attacked in a lawsuit that we're bringing right now against a school system, the Bossier Parish in Louisiana, who are proselytizing Christianity in their public schools. The students there have formed a movement, and you know what it's called? Protect prayer, as though their Christian prayer, which is so dominant in their setting, is what's in need of protection, right? It's sort of, it's the same thing that you're describing, this fragility, except right now we're really seeing it in the form of you know, fundamentalist Christian fragility. So that's, you know, so that's one reaction. And the other reaction is, you know, the Trump-Pence administration is as I said, using religion to discriminate sort of throughout their agenda. I mean, it started out with this rhetoric, you know, with this rhetoric from Trump of, oh, we should all be able to say Merry Christmas. But there's a blueprint for discrimination that came out of the Department of his Department of Justice that's now being implemented by a lot of the federal agencies, including HHS, where we've seen an interim final rule that allows bosses in universities to discriminate against women and deny them their birth control, which we've challenged in court, by the way. And there's sort of countless other ways. They in HHS, they have another rule where we filed comments where they want to allow discrimination in healthcare that would affect a lot of transgender people and women and really all of us, because it can be used, religion can be used as a basis to deny fertility treatments to an interfaith couple, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it can just be used for anyone's desire to discriminate against anyone in this society, which sort of collapses the American experiment, right? Which is sort of the goal. Sure. And I'll say a third thing, which is you raise Sharia law and anti-Sharia statutes. Well, the Trump's Muslim ban, where the Supreme Court is going to rule on that within the next month as well, that's another example of using religious freedom and twisting it to discriminate, right? Religious freedom means everyone is welcome here, sure, right? It means that we don't shut out one group of people based on their religious beliefs and practices like we did with Trump's Muslim ban. And so that's going to be another very significant decision in this space. And if you want to know what the connection is between the Muslim ban Supreme Court case and this Masterpiece Cake Shop case, it's largely that they're both about allowing one tiny fraction of America's religious community, which is this white fundamentalist Christian community, to impose their beliefs on the rest of us. So I think it's important that you brought up the sort of Muslims, because they're implicated in what's going on around religious freedom very much right now.
Well, Rachel Lazar, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Very nice to speak with you.
Well, thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Rachel Lazar, the president and CEO of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a lawyer. She has spent the last two decades fighting for inclusivity for all Americans, and she has an opinion piece at The Advocate. We can protect religious liberty without denying rights to LGBT people. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back with President Trump touting last month's jobs numbers and the new study that finds 40% of the working public believe their jobs are pointless.